Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today, I am so excited to be joined by the triple platinum artist, queer singer, songwriter, poet, and an activist for mental health, fat liberation, and the LGBTQ plus community. I am joined by no other than Mary Lambert. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jen. I don't know why, like, I just feel like crying. Like, I'm so happy. I feel like happy crying. I don't know why. I'm like, this is, I don't know. It feels like I just love you already.
Okay, well, then you're going to make me cry now, because as I shared before we hit record, like, I've loved you for years. And like many people, we were introduced to you, you know, when, you know, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, and you had your song, The Same Love, and the Grammys in 2012. But that was like the moment I'm like, oh my gosh, like what a moment in time and a song. And we'll talk about everything. But it was your song, Body Love, and your spoken word and Secrets and your other work that has always stayed with me and carried me through for years when I've struggled with my body image, or I've wanted to share my secrets or struggled with my own mental health. So this is such an opportunity for me, and I'm nervous and excited. And so I'll stop talking and say hi.
I am a fan of you. I found your podcast and your resources about it maybe almost like 2 years ago when I was doing research for the book I'm working on, and also, you know, resources for my workshop, because there's really not a ton of stuff out there for people who are like trying to conceive, people who are, you know, pregnant and, you know, looking for fertility and looking for resources, and all everything that's out there is like, well, number one, lose weight, you know? And it's like, well, what if not?
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much negativity. It's ridiculous. So,
yes. And so I wanted to be able to send people like, love what you do. And I'm very grateful for your work.
Thank you. That means so much. Well, let's talk about your journey to your work. So in 2008, you were in college doing a bunch of serving jobs and really into spoken word in Seattle. And then you got a phone call or an email from Macklemore. Like what was that like?
It was really bizarre. You know, I feel like, that's what I told everybody. It was like during the Grammys and I was on the red carpet, and I was like, a year ago I was bartending. So that's your only prerequisite for singing at the Grammys is your bartending skills. No, I was performing a lot of spoken word at that time. And the spoken word that I was writing a lot about was about being Christian and about being queer, and how I didn't totally feel at home, obviously, in the Christian church. And I also felt a little bit of like, you know, why are you going to church from my queer friends? Which is like, I feel like really understandable. And so I was exploring that a lot in my writing. And I had been asked to write a worship song for the church that I was attending. And it felt contrived. It didn't feel good. It felt like I was, I don't know, if, I never watched South Park, but there's a South Park episode where Cartman, listen to me, Cartman, Cartman decides to start like a Christian band, and they just change every word from baby to Jesus. Yes. And it's kind of, that's kind of how I felt when I was like working on this worship song. And I was like, you know what? I'm just not cut out for this. It doesn't feel like authentic to me and what I want to write. And then about a week later, I got asked to write a song for Pride. And that also didn't feel right. It didn't feel like exactly what I wanted to write. And it just didn't feel authentic. And I had a friend named Hollis Wongware, and she was a tour manager, producer, writer, performer, poet. I knew her through poetry, and she was sort of a sounding board for Macklemore and Ryan on their album. So they were pretty much done with the Heist. The Heist was about to be released. Thrift Shop had not been released yet. So they were a big deal, especially in Seattle, but they weren't, this was pre-Thrift Shop. So it was like, they were still a bit more tangible.
Yes, yes.
And she called me and said they're working on a song about queer, like a gay rights song that is, you know, talking about the church. And I was like, this is it. This is what I've been, this is the song that I've been wanting to write, where it's like, I mean, I feel like he really tackled the pragmatic side of it, of like, you know, how can you preach hatred at the pulpit and say that this is God's love, because it's not. And I felt like I got to just speak to my experience, which I realized what I wanted to talk about was love. I wanted to talk about the experience of that humanity. And so it just, it felt, everything really fell right into place. And I did not think they were going to actually work with me. Like it, I got that call and then they were like, yeah, can you come by the studio today? I came up with the chorus in about an hour.
And, oh my gosh.
And I sang it for them that day and they were like, okay, yeah, let's record it. And then I didn't hear from them for 2 months. So I was like, oh, they must have gone with somebody else. And then all of a sudden I get this like, you know, email that's like, okay, we're actually releasing it as a single and actually it's going to be part of this campaign. And it was like a whole lot of stuff.
And actually you're going to be singing at the Grammys with Madonna and Queen Latifah. Like, oh my gosh.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. So as someone who's so transparent about body image and mental health, did that play in a role of here you are like bartending 1 minute and then being thrust into the public sphere?
I always hesitate to say this because I feel like it sounds really conceited, but I knew I was always supposed to be doing this.
Wait, I got to cut you off. That is not conceited. That is someone who's talented and has worked so hard for their dream and then realizes this is my moment and I'm going to live it. That's not conceited.
I appreciate that, Jen. Thank you. Yeah, I just felt like I've always been really outspoken about who I am and how I love and all of my shit. And I just felt like here's this opportunity for me to, you know, share this on such a grand, great scale and to do something that felt really meaningful, especially at that time. I mean, this was before gay marriage was passed, you know? Right. And I feel like we have gotten to this such a comfortable place where we really look at like gay marriage as something that is just like, oh yeah, of course everybody can get married. But like it wasn't that long ago.
Right.
You know,
and to stand and sing and to have people there, you know, same sex couples kissing on the Grammys, like that was a huge, huge moment. And that your voice was one of the incredibly powerful voices saying, this is a message. We can love who we love and we shouldn't be condemned or mistreated because of it. It was a really profound moment. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you, Jen. I think too, I haven't talked a ton about this, but like before we left for tour, cause I toured with them for about 2 years, just, you know, coming on stage to sing the song. And, you know, as I was like pursuing my solo career, but it was a really great experience to sort of watch how all this unfolded, you know, as a participant, I guess. And before every time we left for tour, I was like, okay, I need to make sure my will is updated. And I, you know, just who knows what's going to happen. You know, there were protests. There were like, you know, people very against what we were doing, especially that it was on the radio and it was scary. I mean, there were death threats. It was like, it was not the most, you know, what felt like a safe experience, but it felt like a very necessary experience. And I was like, you know, I am willing to die for this. And I knew that's when I was in the right place.
I've got like chills. That's huge. Cause it's your craft, your job, your love, your passion. And then it's who you are in your soul and speaking up for others and being willing to not only just put yourself out there, but to potentially die for this like that. That's really profound and powerful. And it breaks my heart that that is even a concern that anyone should ever have about singing and speaking their truth, but that you felt like your life was in danger. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I appreciate you saying that. I think if anything, it really gave me a template for what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. That wow. I want to create work that's this meaningful and honestly that risky, because something that has that high of stakes and like hopefully pushes the, you know, the needle that much and disturbs the status quo that much and scares the shit out of conservatives that much, then that's exactly what I need to be doing.
Yes.
And I really felt too, once my solo career started, that it also gave me a template for how I want to talk about fat liberation and bodies, because I realized that, you know, when I released the video for She Keeps Me Warm, I remember telling my friends, like, I'm no longer scared of like hate mail about gay stuff. I know the comments that are going to be the worst on this video are going to be about my size,
yeah.
that people are going to be relentless about my size. And I realized that that was in every music video, I needed to be front and center. You know, obviously I have an ego and that's very important to me, but also I want people to know that you can be successful in fat, that you can be sexy in fat, that you can have, you know, like a storybook romance and be fat, you know, like these things are important because we just don't really see them that frequently.
No, we don't.
So yeah. So I think Same Love was really a great template for me to take my art and, you know, and realize that, oh, the messaging is really, really important to me. And my identity is inextricable from the art I make, you know?
I mean, that's why your songs are so powerful. And then you as a poet too, it just interwovens everything, like your singing abilities and your writing together. I think that's a perfect segue to Body Love. And can you just talk about writing Body Love and what that was like? I won't quote it perfectly, but I'll never forget like the first time I heard it and then hearing like, you know, to love my body like my mom loved my baby feet. Like, you know, you can say the right words, but that has always stuck with me of like, oh my gosh, my mom loved my chunky little cute feet. And like, why do I hate this chunky body that my mom loves? And, you know, and then before I became a mom and then I realized, oh my gosh, I love my son no matter what. Like, why do I hate myself? This is ridiculous. And he loves me and he loves my chunky belly. Like, that's how we snuggle. So I'll just never forget that lyric always really hitting hard with me and sticking with me.
Oh, thank you. I it's funny because I wrote Body Love when I was 19. So like long before Same Love. And I had been performing it and realized, you know, as I performed it, the feedback that I would get afterwards felt really profound and it felt impactful. And I knew that I had sort of hit a nerve. And this was also around the time. So this is amazing because this is how I met Sonia Renee Taylor. So Sonia and I were in the same poetry circuit along with Denise Jolly. Wow. So I met Sonia and Denise and Rachel Wiley and Rachel McKibbins, and we were all in the same National Poetry Slam circle. And it was this really neat subculture of people just really speaking their truths and really saying like, this treatment of fat people is unacceptable. Yeah. And not only do we need to unlearn and untangle all of this stuff that's tied to worth and value and the way we view bodies, but we need to do it in a way that centers intersectionality and mm-hmm. also realizes that there's so much more at stake here. And so when I wrote Body Love, I think I was still learning that. And, you know, I realized that as much as I performed it for other people, every time I performed it, it was like I started believing it more. I wrote it for myself because I was being extremely self-destructive, because I was, you know, experiencing self-harm. I was the one that was drinking to oblivion and hoping that, you know, just to get into bed with anybody to have some form of validation as a fat person, as, you know, like just someone who had been abused, that was like, this is the only way that I can find value in myself is if somebody else finds me sexually desirable or romantically desirable. And I realized how frustrating and sad that was, that I didn't have any other barometers or markers of my own worth. I couldn't see it reflected anywhere else in the world. And I think that makes sense because that's what we're sort of conditioned to believe, that that sort of objectification of women is like, oh, well, this is all I'm really good for. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not seen as, you know, romantically desirable, or my fatness is like, you know, something to change, then I'm failing. I'm failing in so many different ways. And so writing Body Love was really my, I don't know, it was my proclamation to be like, I'm really going to try to not be self-destructive, because I see it mirrored around me, and everybody I know is experiencing the same thing. And if we're all experiencing the same thing, then something's wrong with the culture, not wrong with us.
Yeah. And no one would, not no one, but like, it was just starting to come into the forefront more of that conversation about body love. I actually met Sonia Renee Taylor in 2014 at the Body Love Conference that Jess Baker put on, and we were both presenters there, and Tess Holliday was there and a bunch of other people. And it was like, oh, something's happening. Like, you know, obviously the fat activism movement has been, and especially the, you know, voices of Black people and people of color have been around forever. And I'm not trying to say that it was in this time that everything changed or that this was what changed everything, but it was just felt like there started to be a shift. And I think it was a lot of social media too brought the voices and the conversations and the visibility of fat bodies of all different sizes, shapes, and colors to the forefront. And then all these people were actually getting together for these conferences and saying, wait, like, this is rad. We're all together. We don't, like, we're wearing whatever we want, and we're wearing like tight ass awesome clothes and feeling great about ourselves. And we're speaking our truths, and we're in a safe space. And because so often we're not, even just going to the grocery store isn't. And it just felt like this time where so many people have had radical conversations and pushing the needle, and then it started to go mainstream, and it felt easier to have certain conversations. But then we also needed our songs, we needed our lyrics, and there were people like you who were giving us our thoughts and our voices, because everything you were saying about, you know, trying to find romantic love just to feel worthy, oh my, I can relate to that, and countless other people listening are shaking their heads yes too.
Right. Oh, thanks, Jen. Yeah, it was a really special time too. And it also, you know, I was scared because when I released that to a wider audience after Same Love, so I had written it when I was 19, I recorded it when I was about 22. And then when I signed to Capitol Records, we re-released it on an EP called Welcome to the Age of My Body.
Yeah.
And we split it into two parts. So it was like part one and part two, and sort of sandwiched the EP. And I was really excited that this major label wanted to put money into something, you know, right? Like this. And it felt, it was instructive that this can be something that I pursue, that I also, like, I don't have to choose between being, you know, quote unquote, like, commercially viable and sacrifice in messaging. And so it taught me that there's room for me. There's room for me to be complex and to talk about more than one issue. You know, I'm not just the gay girl. I'm also, you know, I'm like, there are so much more facets to me, and to be able to share those in my art is exciting.
Now, as an artist working under a record label, did you feel like you had that real control to be able to just show up as yourself with those messages? Because I know you ended up leaving, and we'll talk about that later. But in that moment in time, were you fully supported? Because I know for so many, especially female artists, they weren't.
It's complicated. And I feel like if you were to ask me at that time, I would have said, absolutely, I'm supported in every way. Like, they're not asking me to change who I am or lose weight or anything like that. And that's true. There are ways that record labels and people in the entertainment industry do a really great job of manipulation.
Yeah.
To make you feel like you're in control and to make you feel like you're making these decisions yourself. So for instance, like on my debut album, I had a poem about sexual assault that I thought was really important to put on. And it's not that the record label said I could not do that. They said they had me on the phone and they handed me to each person in each department to tell me why it wasn't such a great idea. Mm. And the main argument was that Target is not going to carry this if it has a poem about sexual assault. And wouldn't you rather reach a wider audience? You're not changing. And we're not telling you to change the poem. We're just saying maybe save it for the next album or maybe save it for a single. We'll do a whole campaign, Mary. Of course, the campaign never happened. And of course, I took it off the album because I wanted it to be, you know, commercially successful. And I followed their advice. And so, yes, I was in control. But then sometimes I'd like walk into the studio and there's like another songwriter there because they wanted to make sure that I wasn't just writing Tori Amos songs. I was writing like, you know, I had Katy Perry's project team. So wow. Having Katy Perry's project team means that they're really accustomed to somebody that's a workhorse. I don't know how she does it, but I didn't know how to say, listen, like I have bipolar disorder, like, yeah. Like lots of trauma. Like I can't do what she does. And I need a little bit more patience and I need a little bit more of, you know, like just a little bit more give. And so of course we butted heads a bit and yeah, obviously we can get into that, but it was at that time I did feel like personally, they weren't trying to control anything about what I was saying online. They didn't control my social media. They didn't control, and they didn't tell me what to do, but creatively and with, you know, quote unquote, a product, whatever the music was, they did have quite an arm in.
That makes sense. But just even seeing your music videos with you wearing dresses and shirts without sleeves, dare I say, that was kind of radical back then, you know? And I just remember seeing a body that looked somewhat similar to mine and mine's even bigger and being like, oh, well, if she's doing this and it's being represented, like it was those little things that make such a big impact in the everyday person like me that sees a larger body talking about loving themselves while, you know, showing off their arms. And that's okay. Like so many people are just at that point where just walking out the front door in a tank top is liberation. And heck yes, it is. But we needed to see it and we saw it in you and many others around that time. So I'm glad that you were able to still be yourself and have your voice. Do you feel like Secrets came out of the song Secrets came out of that Katy Perry team and more pop and wanting to be like on the Billboard's top charts?
Absolutely. Like the phrase on with my project team was like, you know, I want to be the fat gay Taylor Swift. Like I wanted it as badly as they wanted it to.
Well, as long as you wanted it as bad. Yeah. I mean, because that is my favorite song of yours because it has always pumped me up when I, you know, as someone who has been a blogger for over 10 years, like I've said almost everything and then being able to say some really hard, scary things, like I would play it as an anthem. Like, I don't care what the world knows and what my secrets are. I can do this. And like, you know, say you start off like I have bipolar disorder. My shit's not in order. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, okay. It's okay to talk about these things and it's okay to be a hot mess. And it's okay just to show up in the world because everyone else feels the same in their own right. But we're made to feel like we just have to conform. And I love that song so much. I love so many of your songs, but that one has always been a really good anthem for me. And that was like an opportunity where your mental health, talking about mental health too, like here you are, you know, a queer human and a fat human, and those two things in and of itself is a lot. And then also to be so much more public about mental health too. What was that experience like?
Honestly, the album team that we had for Heart on My Sleeve was really, I really view that album as like a collaboration album. That's kind of how I have to view it. Like everything that I've released outside of that album is really me. But that album felt like a pop collaboration. And I'm really glad I made it because it was, you know, it was commercially successful. And I got to especially make a song like Secrets. But that day in the studio, so I was working with Eric Ross, who had produced Tori Amos, and he had done Under the Pink and Little Earthquake.
Oh,
and then Sarah Bareilles' Little Voice. So that was, which were, I mean, two of my biggest inspirations. So I wanted to work with him. I knew that he was like, he had a good ear for it. And then the label brought in this guy, Benny Cassette, who had worked with Kanye and a few other people. So to bring sort of a hip hop element and pop element into it. And then they also brought another songwriter, Mozella, who had just written Wrecking Ball. So we had sort of this powerhouse of people wanting to make intentional, like popular music. And it felt like a really good group to share some really raw stuff with. And we wrote pretty much the whole album together. And working on Secrets, Mozella really did so great with that chorus. And she created the melody line for it. I don't care if the one knows what my secrets are. I mean, it's just really great melody writing. And then I really came up with the all of the lyrics and then the melodies of the, you know, the verses. So the verses are a bit punchier and, you know, obviously, you know, and I really wanted to be upfront and just like share that I had bipolar disorder. I never heard a song like that before, especially in a pop song. And I thought, you know, this is for the same reason that I'd seen a template for Same Love and Body Love, that here's this opportunity to do further destigmatization of something that is really, you know, I was going to say polarizing, but you know, that is, that has a lot of judgment around it. So here's another opportunity to further push positive messaging out there. And, but I will tell you, like the next day I had this like truth hangover where I was like, oh no, we recorded this. Is this too much? Like, are people going to really like, are people going to judge me? Are people going to, you know, like, are venues not going to want me to come? Are, you know, radio promoters not going to work with me because I'll seem unstable or something, you know? And I had to just trust my instinct that it was the right thing to say and that everything was going to be okay. And then the feedback that I got from radio promoters and my team at Capitol, everybody was very positive about it and I felt safe. And so we just kind of continued with it. And I'm really glad we did. And it went gold in 2015, which was awesome. And to, you know, have it on like the pop charts was just really inspiring. It was cool.
Definitely. And it was like that pop music that everyone was like into then and still is, like you said, it was written to be that way, but it was the messaging was like the everyday person could relate to, as opposed to a lot of pop songs that you're like, that's the life that people dream of. And this was the life that most people live. And I think that's what probably made it so relatable behind, like, you know, the fun music and you dancing and singing opera, and you know, it was all of it. It was a moment and it was needed, and I'm so thankful personally for that song as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Yeah, and the video, actually, we had Declan Whitebloom directed it, and he directed Taylor Swift's 22.
Oh, wow.
And so it was like, I was like, I really am the fat Taylor Swift, you know.
Yay.
It's happening.
That's awesome. So then in 2015, you chose your mental health and you stepped away. I just want to hear the story because I think so many people can relate to having this moment and needing to change our path completely.
Right. Yeah. I think it takes a lot for someone to realize that they have more power than they are taught that they do. And especially in the music industry and in the entertainment industry during that time, I just felt like it was a fluke that I was there and I didn't really deserve to be there. And so I needed to continually prove and, you know, flagellate myself to make sure that everybody knew how grateful I was, that I didn't need pay, that I didn't need, you know, I didn't need credit for whatever. And I got, you know, I got taken advantage of quite a bit. Mostly what happened was the schedule was so intense. I don't even know how to describe. Like, I'm really busy now, but I'm at least in control and have you know, I have the power to just stop if I want to. During that time, the manipulation was so powerful and so strong. And it was also happening on my own team and with people that I was working with at the time. It felt hostile at times. And I kept getting pushed to do things I didn't want to do. And if I got pushed to do things I didn't want to do, then they started sort of controlling what songs I performed and how I performed them. And they didn't want me to play piano on stage. They wanted me to just sort of sing. And I was like, no, but I really like playing piano. And it just got to be really lonely. And I started to just feel really isolated. I hadn't seen my family in about 2 years. And I had moved into this like beautiful condo in Seattle. And over the, you know, the year that I had it, I was there for honestly a week.
Oh my gosh.
Just the travel was so intense, and they had me doing a lot of favors for other people. So I would fly to Milwaukee, and then I would fly to Orlando, and then I'd fly to California, and then I'd fly to New York. And that would all be within a span of about 4 or 5 days. So I was taking red eye flights almost every night, and always like middle seat and coach, which is fine. But I was just like,
that is not fine. That is not fine at all.
I was getting my vocal cords were getting really strained, so that, you know, I'd be flying all through the night, and then I'd wake up and have to do an interview in Australia at 7 a.m. And they would be asking about, you know, my sexual assault and like things that I had talked about publicly that, you know, they wanted for clicks. And then I'd, you know, travel to the show, and then I'd do the show and I'd feel drained, and then I'd do a meet and greet and I'd feel drained again. And then we'd have to rush to the airport, and it was happening over and over again. And I think it was such a stress. Like I stopped eating.
Oh my gosh.
I was not sleeping. I was just in such a state. I remember being on one of the flights and just thinking, God, I hope the plane goes down. I want the plane to go down. And I realized that was, I was like, that's not normal. That's not a normal feeling for wanting. Like, I was like, I'm not going to kill myself, but I wouldn't be upset if I died. It was just, I realized the point of exhaustion had just really reached a breaking point. And the feeling was like, half of the world would like break their arm off to do what I'm doing. So I have to keep going. I have to keep doing it. And I have all these people counting on me. And then all of a sudden I have a team of 20 people and they have families and they want me to make financially smart decisions because they're getting a cut of it. And if I don't keep this up, then how are they going to pay for their kids' food? Like, it just became so beyond what I was capable of doing. And I was getting just severely depressed. And so I started putting my foot down and I was like, you know, I remember it was about September and I was so excited because I couldn't stop thinking about Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, I was going to be home with my family. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen them in so long and it was just going to be for a couple days, but at least I would have Thanksgiving. And I got a call when I was performing, I think like in Albany or something. And they said, great news. We got you an Australian tour for Thanksgiving. And I'm sobbing. I'm like, and I should be excited. I should be excited because I get to tour Australia. And I realized like, this is not working. And so I said, I can't do it then. Can we please push it? And they said, no, we can't push it. And then I said, well, okay, I'm not doing it then. Wow. Like if you can't push it, I don't book it. I can't do it. I'm falling apart and I'm not well. And that was sort of, I think, when the butting head started, because it was like, oh, well, you're not going to do everything we need you to do. Well, then I don't think this is going to work out. And so, unfortunately, like I lost half of my management team and then I lost the other half of the management team and then I lost the record label. And it really felt like, man, so this is what happens when you take care of yourself, when you're not doing what people expect of you or want of you, you lose it. And it really did feel like a serious loss. And then I don't know, I think something woke up in me where I was like, oh no, this is actually like, this is really freeing and I get to do this on my own terms. And if I fail, at least I've failed with integrity. At least I've failed doing the way I want to do it. If we know that like 95% of the artists, you know, quote unquote fail or don't match some, you know, arbitrary line of success. And if that's going to happen anyway, then why not go out doing something that I really love, you know,
yes,
in a way that feels good for me. And so I got to kind of start building in other stuff. So I started producing and I started doing voice acting and I started trying, you know, I started writing poetry again and doing things that were really filling for me. And so parting ways with the label became like the best possible decision. And I think it was probably the most appropriate thing for my music as well, because they were just like, we don't know what to do with this sad music you're making now. And I'm like, well, I'm sad, so I don't know how to make pop music. Yeah. And I also, it was really affecting me creatively, because I'd sit at the piano and instead of being like, what do I feel? What do I want to write in a way that makes me feel healed? Which is, songwriting was always a form of survival. Now it was a form of money making and sacrifice and really charged with all these other things. And here I am feeling like I'm sitting at the piano and I'm thinking, what do people want to hear? How will this be commercially viable? How can they market this? And I was like, oh, I've lost sight of what matters and what I want to do. And so I had to do a bit of a reset, and it took a little bit and it took a lot of failing, but I really feel so freaking grounded now. And it's okay that I'm not, you know, top 20 on the radio. I mean, it'd be sick to do it again, but like, I'm at least in a place where I feel grounded and stable and safe, and I'm able to make the things I want to make and, you know, work on projects that feel really fulfilling. And I'm not ruling out anything, you know, trying again in the future, but at least now I have a realistic idea of what goes into it.
Yes, you chose yourself. Mm. And that is something we all can learn from too, because it's so important. And now you get to be yourself. And I remember a few years ago, a lot before there were reels on IG, but I think it was IGTV, just watching your rants about, you know, the bullshit fat people go through, and you just being so transparent and so yourself. And I wonder if you would have stayed with the label, if you would have always been able to just say things as you felt them and as they were, you'd probably always be worried about what headline was going to pop up and all of that, where you can just say, hey, this is wrong. And I think so many people need to hear those messages from people that they've also followed for years and been like, oh my gosh, she's such a badass and I love her songs. But like, now she's speaking my truth too, in a way that I need to hear it and be reaffirmed, because I shouldn't accept mistreatment from care providers. I shouldn't accept mistreatment from people I love too, and family members, or like before and after pictures are bullshit, and like all those things that are so important. And I remember you saying them. And so I thank you for just, you know, being raw and vulnerable and like dancing in a crop top in your underwear and being like, oh my gosh, her belly jiggles and mine does too. Like, just awesome. And we need that. So many people need that just in their daily lives. So thank you.
Thank you, Jen. I really appreciate it.
So now tell me what life has been like, you staying true to Mary, and you and your fiance have a podcast where you talk about mental health and being queer and all those important topics that mean so much to you. What has that been like? And still, you know, your Netflix, the I Love Arlo, and like, now you get to do all of these things that fill your soul, but they're on your terms. What has that been like?
Oh, just incredibly fulfilling. Like, and I think too, there's only so much you can grow in your personal relationships when you're in a schedule that hectic, when you're on a label like that. And like, you can sustain maybe relationships, but you can't grow. You can't really grow a community. And I had moved to the East Coast around 2013, 2014. And really hadn't built a sense of community or, you know, I was, my family still lives in Washington State and, you know, and we're there very frequently. So I'm there about half the year and half the year on the East Coast, but I didn't feel super grounded. And so to be able to really make a home and build community with my fiance and like, and feel like this is where I'm supposed to be has just felt really, gratifying and also a real lesson in that creativity doesn't die when you're stable. You don't, you know, I used to hold this very firm belief that in order to create beautiful art, I needed to live a chaotic, self-destructive life so I could have something to write about. And I wish I had known that I could create from a stable place. And I could be medicated and taking care of my bipolar disorder in a way that wasn't harming myself. And, yeah. And I could be sober, you know, so I've been sober for a year and.
That's incredible.
Thank you. And it's been a really great exercise as well in being like, what are the things that I truly value and how can I really truly take care of myself and making room for the more, you know, activism-y stuff that I really mm-hmm. care about and that it's okay if I'm not, you know, constantly churning out music or projects or things like that. You know, I am. I can't help that. I've like always loved to be very, you know, insanely busy. And I love the projects I'm working on. So I'm working on a film score for a documentary film called 1946, which is about the first time the word homosexual entered the Bible. Wow. And that is, I think, is going to be debuting at the Toronto Film Festival in, you know, this fall and will hit all sort of the major festivals. And I'm really excited about that. So doing original music for film and TV has been really exciting. So my background is in like, symphonic composition. So I have a bachelor's in music composition. And so being able to use it in film scoring and TV scoring has been really fun. And I love producing now. So I'm like a big studio nerd.
I'm
producing some other artists and I'm working on an EP about fat liberation and just joy. I want to make this, you know, joyful EP that's like not about there's baggage and shit that comes with it, but just like, there's so much joy on the other side of shame. Like once you start really, truly like loving your body unconditionally, it is so exciting. And it is like, it's freeing. And the thing that I tell people is like, it's not so much that I like walk around and I'm like, I'm a sex goddess 24/7. I go, I don't think about it. I go like, I don't obsess over feeling really negatively about my body. And that sense of peace and joy is like what I wish for everybody. Yes. And so if I create music that really emulates that sense of peace and joy and happiness, then like, that's the kind of thing I want to create. So I'm working on that.
Oh, I'm so excited. I love what you just said is like the clip of the show. It is. And it just like, I remember like, you know, every time you go grocery shopping, fearing what people think about what's in your cart. And it's so liberating to just go grocery shopping and not yes. care. And how sad is that that is something that's liberating, but I can't wait to have the music and the anthem to go behind it because I love to either listen to like murder podcasts or music at the grocery yes. store. So I will have a new anthem when I'm not listening to murder to listen to while I'm grocery shopping and not giving two shits what people think about what I'm wearing or how I'm putting whatever I want in my cart. So that, yeah, that is thrilling.
I'm killing it in a different way.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's also been great to do the podcast. So our podcast with my fiance is called The Manic Episodes. And my partner also has bipolar disorder. So I, you know, it has been really exciting and fun and, you know, like a really neat, almost experiment to see like, you know, we have both previously in our relationships been with people who are neurotypical that are like,
yeah,
you know, always felt like, you know, there's no way I could be with somebody who's bipolar. That's like, that's just asking for, like, you know, a disaster. But it's been amazing because it's like, oh, you understand. I don't have to describe to you what's happening in my shame spiral. You just come and lay next to me and don't say a word and just hold me and know exactly what I need because you experience the same thing. So obviously every mental illness for every person like shows up differently, but ours tend to show up really similarly. Wow. And so we get obsessed about the same thing. So on the podcast, we talk about it a lot. We're also both Episcopalian, which is like odd to, you know, so being able to still talk about being a queer Christian. And my partner is a professor in higher ed. And, you know, being bipolar and a tenured professor is like really, you know, kind of amazing. And there's not a lot of people talking about it. And so there's just always like a wealth of information to be able to discuss, and we've been having guests on, and it's just been a really great it's just really fun to do and to just, you know, talk with my babe.
I love it. Well, I hope people will tune into it because we need to be talking and destigmatizing mental health. It's so important. I can't believe I waited until just almost a year now that I've been on medication for anxiety, and it has changed so much for me. And I'm so glad that I did it. And my partner is so glad that I did it too, because he's like, you don't yell at me all the time now. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how sad that, like, but I would, you know, so it's been really great and good to talk about it, but it didn't feel safe to talk about those types of things for so long. But it's people like you and so many others that have been so transparent about their mental health that makes it safe to even go to your doctor and say, I think I need help. I think I need medication.
Totally. And I think, you know, I feel like this sort of counter movement against medication that's like, just go on a walk, you know? And I think walks are great. I love physical exercise. I'm able to, you know, when I'm able to do it, I do notice a shift. I do feel the endorphins. But if there's a chemical imbalance, if we are really, you know, we live in a capitalistic world. So like we have to, in order to really fully function in this reality, we have to make certain concessions and we have to do certain things. And sometimes that means medication, and it doesn't mean that we're bad. It means that we need that to sort of function and be in the world. The other thing is, like, if everybody needs to go to therapy, if everybody could benefit from therapy, then maybe something's wrong with the culture. Then maybe there's greater societal issues that we're not addressing. And that should be the big wake-up call to people that, like, hey, there's really nothing wrong with the way you're wired or the way that trauma shows up for you or your mental illness or your experiences or your body. Maybe something is wrong with the culture and society. You know, like, maybe we can begin to shift those paradigms as we take care of ourselves, you know, and that's really what I try to do in my workshop as well, in the Everybody is a Babe workshop, because it's like, I want to help people find these neat, you know, brain paradise hacks and ways to view themselves in a positive way and really unlearn some of these negative self-talk, you know, words that we tell ourselves. But at the same time, recognize that that doesn't exist in a vacuum. You know, this negative self-perception doesn't happen because of you. It happens because of the culture. It happens because of issues societally. So let's be aware of that as we work on this, you know?
1,000%. Yes. And I had that on my list too. I wanted to mention the workshop too. And you're working on a book on body liberation too? Yes. All the things.
My last release is, I released a poetry collection called Shame is an Ocean I Swim Across. Yes. And then I released my second full length album called Grief Creature. And they're just both total cry fest. I mean, just trauma. I mean, trigger warning for literally everything, like sexual assault, child abuse, incest, like all of it. And those are sort of, they're a complementary sort of deal for each other. So there are poems that are in the book that are also on the album. So my next project, I really want to pair this EP with a book on fat liberation. And, you know, I'm my editor really wants me to do more memoir stuff. So I'm trying to write it. I'm trying to write anecdotes, but it's hard because I want things to be objective. I want it to be scientific. I want it to be nonfiction, and I want people to, like, you know, take it seriously. And unfortunately, I feel like people just don't take fat people seriously. And when they say, hey, you're hurting us. Hey, like, mm-hmm. we don't have access to medical care the way you think we do. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're not actually a drain on the system. Actually, a lot of us have, like, issues not eating enough. Like, please, yeah. please respect us. Please give us dignity. And I want us to thrive. We deserve to thrive. And I hope that I'm able to keep doing that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I think you'll be able to marry those two things together beautifully, because I'm sure, yeah, just like the record label, you got pressure from your editors and stuff too, but you will find the balance just as you always have. And then you'll find your way to still bring across what matters most to you in your heart. So I'm really looking forward to it. That is so incredibly exciting. And I so appreciate all that you've shared. And I think there's just so many takeaways of staying true to yourself at all costs, because losing ourselves is never worth it. It's not even mm-hmm. worth being at the top of the charts, because you didn't have any time for you yeah. and yourself. And that we can lose ourselves in parenthood or in life or in anything. And we've still got to make room and time and space to care for ourselves truly.
Totally. Yeah. I was thinking about, I know we need to wrap up, but I'm just like having so much fun talking to you.
Oh yeah. No, we can keep going as long as you want. I'm good.
I was thinking about, so I have asthma, and I was a cigarette smoker for 15 years. So real great combination of being an asthmatic smoker that sings. And when I was in fourth grade, I had this big asthma attack, during PE, and we were doing like this, we were running around the school. No, this was middle school. Not that it matters. I hate when people give like erroneous details. It really don't matter. So I'm running around the school and I can feel my chest getting tight, and I know I didn't bring my inhaler. And so I told my PE teacher, like, as I was running to him, I said, I think I'm going to have an asthma attack. I don't think that I can run. Can I walk? And he said, just do your best. And I realized how confusing that is. And when we tell people to just do their best, it's not clear, because do my best at what cost? Do my best in terms of physical performance? Because I can do it. I can push it. I can do what's expected of me if you want me to do my absolute best. But what am I sacrificing? What is my best if I'm actually honoring, you know, all of my needs? And so, of course, I pushed it, and I had an asthma attack, and I had to go to the hospital. And because I heard do your best, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm supposed to sacrifice all of my needs in order to complete this thing. But it's really, you know, as I've gotten older, I realize, you know, our needs don't go away. And even if we don't know what our needs are and we can't recognize them, they don't disappear. They still exist. We just need to figure out what they are. And we need to be able to advocate for them, mm-hmm. because they just get further displaced, and they usually end up causing more issues for us down the road. You know, like if I had just been able to hear, do your best, with an asterisk that said, with the faculties that you have right now,
yeah,
then I probably wouldn't have had an asthma attack. But I did the thing that I thought I was supposed to do. So it really, that was a moment where I was like, okay, what does do my best mean really for me? And I don't need to follow any other template. I need to know what's going to be the right thing for me. And I want people to know that, like, you absolutely do your best asterisk with the faculties you have for your greater longevity and care for yourself. You
know? Yes. I love that so much. It's such a profound story. I think of like getting older and the things that we learn, like boundaries. I didn't know what they were. And I was always trying to like do your best for everyone else and not for myself. Yeah. And there's such power in being like, wait, like, what for myself? What do I need for myself? Or what am I even feeling in this moment? Like giving yourself the time and space to acknowledge your body. And yeah, I love that. Like, do your best, but like, for yourself, what do you need? And yeah. Like, we're always so catering to others and trying to live up to these expectations that are all such bullshit. Like, mm-hmm. show up for you, and yeah. then you'll help to care for everyone and love everyone around you too. Yeah,
totally. Yeah. Which, and I feel like it has really given me a great, yeah. And yet again, like another template for like how I want to engage with people and how I can truly help. I'm not going to be, you know, when I was really financially successful for a time, I was financially very successful for a year. And I didn't know, we were raised super poor. I mean, you know, top ramen for every meal, you know, just like barely making it. And so when I started making money, I was like, I can't keep this. This isn't for me. Like, I'm not supposed to have this. So I was just like, you know, I was just keeping my money. I was just like, how much do you need? I would just like leave money, like cash at the front of my house, like take it, you know, like I don't deserve this. I don't need this. I'm not going to put it in savings. I'm not going to invest. I'm not going to do all the things that I like, you know, that smart, wealthy people do, I guess. No, exploitative wealthy people do, you know. I don't know. Money's I didn't mean to get us on this train, but it was,
no, you're good.
It was just like not knowing what I really deserved. And a way right. that would have been really beneficial is for me to like get some stability so that, you know, 5 years down the road, my credit is not tanked. And, you know, I'm like having to pull myself out of a hole and I'm not able to give anything to anybody because I'm, you know, I'm in a financial rut or, you know, in a having issues. And if I had been more wise or felt that I had deserved to save some of it, then I might not have been in that position that I was in. So it's just like all of these little lessons. So hopefully yeah. I can get closer and more aligned to my own values.
But not feeling worthy is something so relatable. I think yeah. especially for people that exist in marginalized bodies, we're told by society that we are othered and that we're not worthy of certain things. But we are. And yeah. at the base level of having some money in your savings account, you're worthy of that. At the base level of going to the doctor and then listening yes. to your health concerns and not just telling you to lose weight, we are worthy of that. We're worthy of starting a family if that's something that we want, whatever that looks like for anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, we have so much worth just as everyone else does. Yeah. And it's really hard to acknowledge that. And I think it becomes easier with age. We give less fucks. But but if only we could look back in those really hard times where we made such self-destructive decisions, such mm. self-harm, such giving ourselves and our bodies to people who weren't worthy of us whatsoever. But I don't know who I would be now today if I hadn't gone through so much. And I don't yeah. know how I'd be able to relate to people in the way that I can now had I not experienced that. And we're all going to experience trauma. There's no avoiding it. I'd like to turn down the level a little bit on the trauma yeah. that some of us have experienced. But it brings us to who we are today, and we're stronger for it. And now we work on becoming balanced, healthy individuals. Whatever that looks like to each of us is okay. And mm-hmm. yeah, but it's, we need resources and support. So I'm loving all that you're putting out into the world. And I love the way that you approach things and talk about things, because it's not just a, oh, here, snap your fingers and you're going to love yourself, or, you know, be cool with who you are and who you love. No, it's a journey, and it's long, and it's yeah. hard, and it's work, but it's always worth it.
So worth it. Yeah. I wouldn't take any of that work back. I feel, because it feels sustainable, the way that I feel now, and my relationship to my body and my relationship to the world and my actual relationships, like all of it feels sustainable and safe. And I feel like I'm able to really truly be my best with asterisk self.
Yes. Asterisk, all the asterisks. Oh, Thank you so much for having this. Yes. Is there anything else you want to share, promote? Tell us where we can connect with you on Instagram and all the places, and to download your music, and how can we support you?
Yes. Well, I'm on all my socials at Mary Lambert Sing, like a command, like Ursula Sing. And you can check out my website, which has shows. I have some shows coming up and merchandise, and you can check out my workshop, all of the things. I'm very there. Yeah. My website is MaryLambertSings.com.
With an S. I will put everything in the show notes over at plusmommy.com, and I can't wait to see what you'll be unfolding out to the world in the future. Thank you so much,
Mary. Thank you, Jen.
All right, friends. Until next time, take care. Bye.
Bye.